Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back to part two of this big interview. Walter Smith here takes us to Ibrox, where he served first as an assistant to Graeme Souness and, of course, later became a celebrated Rangers manager in his own right. That move to Glasgow, to the club he supported as a boy, introduced Walter Smith to a facet of coaching he'd never experienced at United, with Rangers able to source and buy great footballers. Walter was responsible for bringing some undeniably brilliant footballers to Ibrox, and he tells a story of how he convinced Brian Laudrup to move to Scotland and to become a Rangers legend. Another famous acquisition was Gazza. Walter had no trouble in selling the club to Paul Gascoigne, as he's going to explain, but the former Rangers manager recalls with some affection the various challenges which did come with managing a unique character like Gazza. Enjoy this one. The big interview is there for you. Love you. We are sitting by the banks of Loch Lomond. It's a privilege and an honour. Quite exciting too, after a long time not seeing you, to be with Walter Smith. Walter, thank you very much indeed. Before we came on the mic here, we talked about Graeme, you talked about his presence, the something extra that he's got on and off the pitch, apart from having a brilliant idea, tempo setting. When you first meet for business, when the possibility to go and work with him comes, what's that meeting like? What's the draw? My contention is, based on what he's told us, and says regularly, is that he was a very different man then than he is now.
Well, like everyone else, I mean, I suppose that'd be the case. I must admit, it gave me, you know, five thoroughly enjoyable years. But I loved it at the time. You know, when you go into Rangers, I said I was a boyhood supporter. So when Graeme asked me if I would come along with him, you know, I'd been 20 years at Dundee United, more or less. I had a little break at Dumbarton, but I'd been nearly 20 years at Dundee United. And when I was asked to go to Rangers with Graeme, I had something I just had to do. So
what's the link? I want to know if you'll share. Why does he pick you? What are the links?
Well, I think what happened there, he was looking for someone who had the knowledge of Scottish football, if you like, who was in a coaching environment already to help him out, because he had obviously been in Italy with Sampdoria for 3 years. And, you know, when he asked, I accepted, and we started down a year, 5 years together. It was great. I must admit, I thoroughly enjoyed it, and it was great for me because Jim McLean had a specific way of working that. I was his assistant for a number of years, going on to work with Graeme, who's entirely different.
For example? You know.
Well, I mean, Graeme, obviously, Jim was all coaching, everything, where Graeme's Liverpool background was one of, you know, the whole lot, and Bob Paisley and the others there were great footballing people, very, very knowledgeable people, would put a team together and would say and make their demands on a team where this is the way we're going to play and we'll put you together and you do what you do you know, you go and play. And they engendered a great atmosphere within the Liverpool team. This is Graham telling me, I didn't know. So he brought that with him. Graham would always say to me, you know, we have to get good players in every position. That's what we do. And then we make sure they have the proper motivation and we bring the best out in them. And, you know, when you see Dundee United, Jim McLean had to rear these players and bring them up. We were moving into a circumstance here where you were bringing players in from other clubs and fitting them into your team. So it was slightly different way of doing things.
That's exciting. So you get with him to go and say, there's a player, there's a fantastic player who fits our system, he's got extra above and beyond his technical ability, let's go sign him.
Yes.
That's a very heady experience to...
Yeah, to get, to try and it brought a realisation to me that, you know, like at Dundee United, we were all in it together. We were all guys who had been brought up in the same environment, more or less. Even the boys they brought in, like Paul Hegarty and Eamon Barnett, were very young when they came into Dundee United. So they were brought up in that. Whereas here, you were having to recreate a circumstance almost immediately. Mm. As is happening in more modern football now, players moving from one club to another happens far more often now than used to happen. So therefore, you know, it's important that when you bring them in a modern idiom, your player fits in to your team and you can get that going. So that, back in that period of time, was where it was, and we inherited a team that hadn't been doing too well at the time. Jock Wallace had come back for the second time. Big Jock had been brilliant in his first spell as the Rangers manager. He'd been fantastic. But symptomatic a lot of modern times, Rangers, due to the disaster, had to build their own stadium. They built the modern Ibrox, and it was fantastic. But it meant then there wasn't a great deal of money. Not that money was as it is at the present day, but it was still a vital factor. And it meant that Dundee United and Aberdeen could pay as much money as Rangers and Celtic to keep the players at their club. So that was changing a little bit through Graham. Graham obviously came in and was able to play for a year himself, which was a brilliant start for us. But we only brought in Chris Woods and Terry Butcher. And these were the three mainstay of a team that went on to play for the majority of the year. The rest of the players were all up. Colin West we brought in, but he got injured right away. And he hardly played that season at all. So we really only had three new players. And the influence that those three players had was fantastic. Chris Woods was a great goalie. Terry Butcher and Graeme Souness were probably two of the best motivators on the pitch that I've worked with. They were great. They had a great presence, you know, and they showed me on a personal basis a different kind of view. We at Dundee United, we were all teamwork. These players had a presence on the pitch that the boys at Dundee United didn't have. They were better. They took the responsibility.
How can you?
It's just something different.
There's a magnetism. There's a charisma.
That's a,
not just because we can say the obvious things about both Terry and Graham. We're both, in sporting terms, they're both very aggressive. That's a given, and it's
yes.
True. There's no question about that. But there's something else, and you've used the word leaders about managers. There's a leadership quality. I don't know what words to use about to try and break it down and describe it, because it isn't just raw aggression. I don't think that's true at all.
No, not even close. No, I don't mean that. What I mean was that they brought something to it. They brought a personality to the team. You're saying a magnetism there. But it brought their personality and to the team. And it wasn't the manager who was imposing the personality on. And Graeme Souness's time, Graeme's time, for him it was difficult because he was a player and a manager. But for Terry was our captain. And, you know, Terry Butcher led as a person. He led. Different for a player to lead than for a manager to lead. And he led as a captain. And he was fantastic for us. So we had only three guys in, but Chris was a great goalkeeper. But Terry and Graham had this personality that imposed himself on the rest of the team. And we went on to win the league that year, which was a remarkable turnaround. And to be fair to all the guys who were there, and some great players there. You know, David Cooper, you know, Alan McCoist, you know, a young Ian Durant, you know, they were terrific. And Derek Ferguson was a good young player as well. And they were all in there learning. We had some decent pros, Cammy Fraser and others in the team. Jimmy Nicol came in to play for us. You know, others, they were boys who... So we got our team together there. And as I say, Graham played all the first year. And then, obviously, the second year, he was just reaching the end and only played occasional games. But it was the start of a great spell for us, I must say, and one that that took me into another kind of footballing world from the one I had been brought up in at Dundee United.
When he moves on, one of the things that sticks in my mind is that you have another European adventure which takes you within a goal of the European Cup final. Rangers beat Lyngby, Leeds United play against an extraordinary Marseille side. And if I'm not wrong, looking at it here, if you win the last game in Group A, is when the Champions League was divided differently. It's the first season of the Champions League, I reckon. After the draw in the Velodrome against Olympique Marseille, a home game against Moscow, CSKA Moscow, would see you through to what is the Champions League final, effectively.
Well, the game, the second last game in Marseille was the game, you know, more than anything, that if we had won that match, we were through to the final.
Guaranteed.
Yeah. And
this is a Marseille of Barthez, Boli, Anglema, Desailly.
Yeah, the full...
Didier Deschamps, Abdi Pelle, Rudi Voller, Alan Boksic, managed by the great Ruben Gottels.
We had a great... The thing about that was that team, our team had just kind of started the European adventure, and we, in the first game at Ibrox, the game against Marseille, and we had preliminary rounds there. It was a different way of doing the Champions League at that time. The preliminary rounds were there, and we had to play in Copenhagen, and we had to play against Leeds, and these qualified you for the sections, and then in the sections there, we got in the first game we played Marseille. We were well beaten. We drew, but we were well beaten. they were terrific in the night, and they were a really, really good team. And we managed to score two goals late in the game to get a 2-2 draw. And, you know, they looked far better than us in that one. But as we went on in the group, we gained a lot of confidence there. And when we went back to Marseille to play...
If anybody hasn't been there, that's also heated, passionate, hostile, difficult place, hell of a stadium. It's no matter that we've listed all the players there and a wonderful manager, that's a venue.
They were more nervous than we were in that one. You know, that was another game where Scottish teams have been caught up in bribery scandals and different things like that. Well, there's, again...
It's a Marseille side that gets stripped of the French title in that era for having bribed referees.
There was... Same European wise, they got caught there. But referee was Dutch, and there was no question on that night that there was no problem in that respect. You know, it wasn't that it was there. It was just galling that, you know, it could have happened in other games. In the context of that, the referees who refereed our game against Bruges Ibrox prior to the game against Marseille was one that was again held up for suspicion afterwards. And the only contentious thing I would have said was in that Bruges game, Mark Haley got sent off, which meant that he missed the game in Marseille. And that was the only thing that I could look at in the game. I thought that was
a Polish referee
contentious one.
Sent off just before half time.
Thank
you. So the idea is that your performance. It's also on little intangibles. When the game's not straight, it's like, how have Marseille been refereed in other games?
Graham, everybody. There's loads of other teams suffer from that. I like to forget about it now and just go and what happened. And on that day, we played as well in the game in Marseille as Marseille played in the game at Ibrox. We played really well in that game. And we, young Gary McSweegan came on and just about scored in the last seconds of the game that would have taken us to the final. So it was there, and the draw meant that we had a circumstance where we had to go to Marseille, had to go to Bruges, and
you've got Moscow here.
We played CSKA at home. So there we drew 0-0 as it turned out, but Marseille only had to win the game in Bruges, and they did. So they got to the final and they won the European Cup there. But it was a great campaign for us. It was one that we played exceptionally well in it. We had a fantastic season that season. You know, we were in the midst of one where we had a run of games where we went 44 matches without losing, and it was great. 1992-93. So it was. We had 1 year build up when Graham left, and I had 1 year. Then we got our team together in the second year. There was a fantastic season for us. So,
and as close as a disappointing, but club's been to a European Cup final or Champions League final since, and for some foreseeable time, I'd suggest. It's a long time ago, but to be that close was a hell of an achievement.
Yes, it was great.
Does it niggle?
The AC Milan team at the time was just on its way down. You know, they had been the preeminent team for a number of years, had been great, and they were just getting to that stage where they weren't as good as they were. So, I mean, we were up there. And
it was played. A winnable
we
final.
We had improved dramatically in European terms, even over that competition. We were playing better at the end of it, European-wise, than we were. At the start of it.
Some of the greatest football that I saw in your teams, even though you've emphasised teamwork throughout, growing at United, trying to find it when you purchase at Rangers, came from individuals. There's two in particular, Laudrup and Gascoigne, who played fantastic football for you. I'm interested about the process of how you sign men like them. Let's leave wages aside. People pay big wages, footballers are tempted by wages, that's fine. But the actual act of saying, how do I get a player like that? How do I persuade them? How do I sell them the package? That became something that you were very successful at, very good at, and brought Scottish football some of its great characters. Tell me a little bit about, first of all, Brian, the how. How'd you get him? What's the process? What were the ups and downs?
The process was, at the time, you know, when you work closely with your chairman, your owner, or whatever, we were in the midst of a team that had played exceptionally well for 3 years when I took over. We had to change the team around from Graham and I were in the process of changing the team because the three-former rule for European games was coming in. So therefore, we had to have a circumstance
change of balance
where we were turning around a lot of players. We had a lot of English players who were obviously classed as foreigners, and we were having to change that around. So when Graham left, I had to continue that process. So that team, when it changed, had 3-4 years of exceptional football. They played very well, and I started to say, well, you know, we've got to find something to bring an extra spark to us. So you look around, then all of a sudden I read in a newspaper that Gascoigne's leaving Lazio. And I had met him on holiday the year before in Florida. And so I...
Just bumped into him?
Yeah, he was in the same hotel. So I'd met him. And he didn't know who I was, but I mean, that's Paul. But anyway, I had my two boys with us, so they obviously knew who he was. And like everybody else, he was wandering about a beach. They'd started to play football with the kids, and you get to know him. So I thought he would bring a much-needed spark to her. And sure enough, when I sat down with the chairman, I said, look, you know, I've got opportunity here. I said, Gascoigne's coming back, why don't we? And now, when you look at it now and you look at the Premiership now, but then Rangers, Celtic, you know, could still compete in that. It was just after the middle 90s it started to go away from us in terms of finance. But we could still compete. The chairman got in touch with the president at Lazio and said, you know, we would be interested in signing Paul Gascoigne. And he said, fine, okay, there's a number of English clubs want. We're going to transfer him at the end of the season, you know. So the chairman said, well, can we speak to the player? Yeah. So it was the end of the season. And so I just got on a flight to Rome, and the people at Lazio gave me his address, and and I stayed in the hills outside Rome, and I just got a taxi and went up and doorstepped him. And,
I didn't know that. I thought it was all a lot more scientific and complex than turning up and saying...
No, well, it wasn't even a matter of watching Paul Gascoigne play, because, I mean, he didn't play, he was injured. You know, he'd been out with a broken leg for most of that season. I went up, chapped his door, and I heard the quad bike. I didn't know it was a quad bike at the time, but I heard this machine coming up and the doors open. He looked at me and he says to me, what are you doing here? He said, I said, I'm here to try and get you to come and sign for Rangers. He said, okay.
No way.
He did.
I'm not
kidding. I'm not joking. He said to me, okay. So, and to the day, I said, did the people at Lazio tell you that Rangers had been? No. He said, I didn't know you were coming. And he had been going away on holiday, and I was very fortunate. I got him the day before he was going away. So we had an interesting day at his place, and then I got a car back to the airport and flew back, and true to his word. His agents at the time wanted him to go to an English club, but he said no. He said, I'm going to Rangers. So, and he stuck it out, in fairness to him. So we eventually got him. That was great.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What was it like? Because I've met him. And I think the world of him. We've spoken about him so often in the podcast, particularly when we were talking about Chrissy Waddle, who roomed with him, and he's got the same affection as I has. Chris kind of, the little grimace and the snort that Waters giving. Yeah, Chris was the same. It was sort of like half love, half how did I live through that? And Gaza's throwing arm came up a lot because Chris had done England trips. Particularly if the hotel was anywhere near a public area, Gaz would buy boxes of eggs and sit by the window with all the patience of a Second World War sniper and pick people off.
I mean, you know, everybody's got their kind of stories. See, just the fact that he came, and I must admit, he, you know, for us, he needed that. And Brian Laudrup, you know, again, we needed a player. You couldn't have two opposite types of guys.
Brian, yeah.
Brian was unhappy in Italy because the way of life, the intensity of it all, and how the fans are on top of them all the time, and everywhere they go, was something that that Brian himself didn't particularly. I didn't know that at the time, but it was there. But my colleague Archie Knox, I've been following. We used to just follow the national teams as such, you know, and go to international games. So I would do more Southern Europe. Archie would do Northern European ones, and I said to him, look, you know, I see that one of our scouts had said to us, you know, Brian Laudrup, I see that he's free. He played for AC Milan, and his last year on loan from Fiorentina. So he was going back to Fiorentina again. So he didn't want to go back, and he knew he was leaving Milan. And we thought, well, why not? So again, we got in touch with the club and asked for permission to talk to the player. So Fiorentina gave that permission. And so I went and met Brian, sat down, spoke to him. And he said, I want to come to Scotland to see what it's like and where we'll live. So he came to Helensburgh that we were talking about in the early part of the interview, and so he could enjoy this view. And Brian was a home-loving, quiet guy who really enjoyed it because he could come home. Nobody bothered him. He didn't get bothered anywhere, and he was just allowed to go and play football. And he's fantastic input for us. He was great.
There has to be days. Over our conversations throughout my career, I've sold you ideas that are in my head, and you're much more pragmatic and practical. But there has to be days when you're sitting on the bench, irrespective of you're winning that game or you're about to win a trophy, and you sit and watch and you go, you know, I signed that guy, that's the right guy, that's beautiful football.
There are a few times, you know, for a manager to, you know, or a few players through your career who, you know, when they were in the team that you were in charge of or as a coach or the manager, who you were always hoping would get on the ball, you know, and you would hope that they would go on the ball because they supplied something that you didn't really know was going to happen. You know, for a lot of other guys, once you get used to them, you know what a player's going to do in certain circumstances, where he's going to play. So Brian Laudrup and Paul Gascoigne brought us back to a team that badly needed it, and they saw us through some, you know, difficult years at the end to try and win 9 in a row, and a big thing in Scotland to equal Celtic's achievement. So, you know, for us, I sat there and watched them, and both of them, in their own way, were terrific. They were a throwback. Brian Laudrup was a player that he could do anything. He could have been a defender if he wanted to. You know, he could tackle. He had obviously fantastic skills. Mm-hmm. He could pass, he could dribble. He was brilliant. You never saw the tackling aspect in the games, more or less, because that wasn't his forte. But
he saw it in training?
Yeah, you could see it in training. We used to have the usual training.
Can I throw this at you as well? Because you worked with him all the time. Now, I think this about Zidane, for example. Whenever you're up close to, when you see Zidane, you don't realise that he's a physical item, that he's big and strong. And
yeah.
Now, Brian's not exactly the same dimensions as Zidane, but Brian was actually quite a big athlete, tall, well-built man. Whereas what you see, or what my mind's eyes tell me, is you see all the elegance and the balance and the movement, and he looks lithe and small when he's not. And I think that's a combination that people forget, that to be built like he is, but still to be gliding over the pitch as if you're not touching it, is, I think that's a big, big element in his brother's success too.
And his makeup, it was great. So, you know, for us, you know, the both of them were terrific. But they took us away from, you know, maybe being a unit, if you like, you know, more or less, or the guys that played for us before, well, some exceptionally talented boys. You know, both these players were kind of individualistic, if you like, more than anything else. And, you know, it was great, Brian. I enjoyed the kind of freedom to play that we gave him. And they paid us back with a number of goals and fantastic performances. So I just hope that you know, for any of the boys that you play under, that you have us there and they play for the team, they enjoy it at the time. And the majority of the guys that we have enjoyed the football at Rangers. And they were, I think, hopefully everybody remembers it as a great club and a great time in their career.
What about managing, Paul? You must have a lot of patience.
It was always a challenge, but mainly in the kind of the boyish aspects of it.
He's very, very funny.
The kind of that are things. But when you take Paul Gascoigne, you take him knowing what you're taking. No use complaining about it. You know, you've got to, you sit down and say to the rest of the guys, look, lads, we brought him in. He'll probably get away with a bit more than the majority of the rest of you, but he'll win us football matches, you know, and he'll do that. It was never bad, you know, in a bad sense. It was always stupid things that would, it would go and annoy you. Things that you know, it was kind of...
Was there a car? He wouldn't even, was there a car in the loch at one stage?
He wouldn't even know about anything like that. You know, like, they just happened to him. They just come into his head and it happened to him. And the repercussions were always left to me or the, whatever. I must say, my colleague, Archie Knox, handled him fantastically and kept him out of my road for the majority of...
you liked him, because you took him at Christmas.
You wouldn't...
You put an arm around him,
you wouldn't like him. To a degree... Yeah, I also got to, you know, be the other way with him as well. But, and that works for a period, and then he lapses back into what he was. But no one can take away the fact that, you know, I mean, one of the most talented footballers of that generation of players. Instinctively talented.
He's helped us learn as well, which I think is important, certainly to my perspective, in that there's been a great advancement of how to handle mental health issues in sport through his life, after his career mostly. I think that's quite important, because really that's the only thing that's caused him difficulties, in that coping has not been his number one ability. And I've noticed a change in how we talk about things, what provision sport makes for the pressures.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing, you know, like, when he lost the Gaza persona, then that was always going to cause him a bit of a problem. He loved football. Mm-hmm. But he knew that he was exceptionally good at it. And he never bogged himself down with tactics or anything like that was involved in the team. It was just play. And that was Paul Gascoigne. There was Gaza, and that's what you got. Play him as a midfield player, and that was it. You know, he wasn't overall interested in having an understanding of formations and things like that. So when the footballing side was going to leave him, you always felt that there was going to be a problem for him. But the one thing about him, everybody that knows him, I'm sorry to see, but has eventually happened to him. And, you know, it's one of those things. Many, many people have tried to help. And obviously, with those giving him that help, if it's not working out the way it should be, then there's obviously a very, very deep-rooted problem there. And that brings a kind of sadness to, you know, that having seen a talent. I always remember one day I met Billy Connolly, and he said to me, he said, how are you getting on with Gascoigne? And I said, as usual, at the mention of the name, you start to laugh. And he said to me, Walter, always remember that you have to live with a genius. The genius will never live with you. And I always remember that statement. And that was Paul Gascoigne. We had to live, everybody's had to live with him and his time. But what he brings, and what he brought to us football-wise, was fantastic.
What I think I'm asking as well, and I'm certainly proposing a little bit, I knew him just a millionth, just two, three meetings, whatever, every now and again. If you take away his demons and you take away the difficulties that he's had, which are not of his own making, some of them are inherited, whatever, he's a hell of a human being as well. He's a hell of a guy. Genuinely funny, nice, thoughtful. And it's not just a fool's, I'll give you anything. There's a propulsion of genuine. If you take away all the football talent and take away the pressure and maybe make his overall life as a man maybe even better, there's a really good, funny, quick, bright-minded guy in there too.
Absolutely. I mean, all that aspects of it, they're all there. They're all there. But, you know, you just felt whatever underlying, I mean, we're not, and I'm not intelligent enough to know what is causing him, the problems that he has at the present moment. In fact, I don't think many people are, because everybody seems to have had a go, and, you know, unfortunately, not a lot of it seems to be working. So for those of us that know him, I would say that's probably most people that know him, you know, from the footballing perspective anyway, we all wish he could eradicate those aspects from him and get back to some kind of normality. But
I saw him 2 days ago, coaching kids, with people saying thank you for coming, mounting a session, he was fit, he was well, it may only be temporary. But I raise it because I think that when people listen, I think it's worth highlighting what was good about him, what he was good at, what type of person he's like, frustrations and bumps aside, and we all wish him his well-being, but my perspective is I watched him, I saw him one of the happier times of his life in his career working for you. And I bet that by the time we get Gaz on the big interview, he'll have good things to say about being managed by Walter Smith. That's my proposition. And as in the majority of our conversations over the years, you can bat that away if you want. It's been good going back over the triumphs of your career. Very interesting. I feel we've touched about the surface of it by about 5%. So we may come back for more. But you've got golf calling you away, so that's more important than this.
When you retire, you know, you miss the kind of competitive aspect that football brings to you, I think, more than anything else, you know. So golf sort of brings it back to me. I mean, where you compete with yourself as much as anything else. And
is there anything worse than competing with yourself?
It's the most frustrating game
in
the world.
That's where you drive yourself absolutely, completely bonkers.
It's the most frustrating game in the world. I started playing late, and I sometimes wonder why I do it. But anyway, yes.
Favourite shot, favourite club?
It's just good
around the greens.
Oh, I'm just. I don't have any favourite club. I just enjoy. It keeps you active. You get ruins a good walk. People would always say, but no, I love it. I think it's great. I watch it quite a bit. I'm quite fascinated by, after trying to play, even though it did start later on. I don't know how these guys do it. I don't know whether I would like to have to sink 3-foot putts for an awful lot of money. And
you've given me my outline. I would, listen, if I was sitting and you were at the Masters and it was a 16-foot putt to win it, my money would be with the bookies that ball would go in the hole. That's what I've learned. That's what I've learned over the years.
No, I've been to Augusta, and I can assure you that the greens in Augusta are not conducive to that.
It's an uphill putt I've given you to win it. Walter Smith, Masters champion, green jacket, blue heart. I've enjoyed that very much indeed. Thank you. A fabulous football career and well explained. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Graham.
The Big Interview is produced by Backpage and me, Graham Hunter. The music you always hear, the music that you love, is Beer Jacket. You can enter exclusive competitions and put your questions to our future Big Interview guests by getting on the mailing list at grahamhunter.tv. Yes, several thousand of you have done it, but come on, slackers at the back, sign up. Thanks for being there. Without you, this would be fun, but a lot less fun. See you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.